It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you all along on this Saturday, and we've moved into the merry, merry month of May.
Post-turkey season.
Post-turkey season. We'll do the post-mortem on turkey season coming up in just a little bit. Also, Conservation Advisory Board meeting at the ballroom there at Gulf State Park. That's going on. I think you can sign up to speak starting at 8, and they start taking comments at 9 o'clock. So, yeah. You know, often Conservation Advisory Board meetings are in Montgomery or somewhere else. Okay, y'all, they're in our backyard. If you're in South Baldwin, you got a concern, there's no excuse right there in your backyard. But even listening to us this morning, you're in Mobile County or whatever, make the ride. Gulf State Park, that's going on today. So we'll talk about that coming up in just a little bit. But I want to get to fishing and talk to our buddy Captain Charlie Gray of Gray Gulf Charters at the south end of Mobile Bay, checking things out at Dolphin Island. Hey, man.
Morning, guys. How are y'all?
I'm doing fine, Cheeto Man.
Cheeto Man's very upset with us.
Post-turkey, those are bad words, man.
Yeah, that's right.
It's terrible.
It's like on a big holiday weekend when all the people in South Baldwin go, oh, here they come. Here all the people come down 59. Well, turkey season ends, and folks like Captain Charlie Gray go, oh, gosh, here comes Mike and Sean and all the guys that spent the last month and a half turkey hunting.
Listen, last weekend, you would have thought turkey season was out because of Dolphin Island. They were parked all the way back up to Bienville. What is it up there to the where everybody cooks out and everything? What do you call that?
The park? Yeah, Bienville Square.
Yeah, Bienville Square. They were parked all the way back up there last week. Cadillac Square. Yeah. There you go. So I guess a lot of people thought turkey season ended last weekend.
Except for you and I.
Except for me and you.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a little bit. So let's talk about it. It is May. Man, if there had to be, and maybe you can correct, in my opinion, if there had to be a month attributed to each fish, if we had one of those old, remember you used to get the placemats at restaurants where they show you a state and a symbol for the state where they overly simplified everything? Well, if we're going to have an overly simplified fish calendar, I think speckled trout is the picture that goes with May.
Yeah, it's good. It's been nice, you know, small fish around, but got some nice fish mixed in. This water's kind of messed up still. Been so chocolate mud, so much water was released from upstate through the dams and whatnot. And something Mike and I were talking about a few weeks ago. We got some ideas of what, you know, where all this fresh water's coming from, obviously upstate, but it's made a difference. You're having to find, you know, clean water out front. You know, the water's pretty good farther to the west and farther to the east. You got good water. But in the bay and the general area around Dolphin Island, It's terrible right now.
But the nice thing is Barry Steam Plant reading fallen down into round 7 right now, so it's continuing the fall. That's good. Things will get better. This is one of those kind of nerd questions I have, but, you know, we talk about speckled trout and parts per million for salinity, what it does, where it moves fish, but also has a lot to do with when they'll reproduce, right? Charlie, there's a certain saltiness they have to lay eggs and fertilize them.
Yeah, and they like to typically get around the sand or bottom, you know, grass flat, something like that, where they can do that. Right now, the farther west you go, the higher the salinity. Mm-hmm. Right around Cedar Point, Dolphin Island, you're at 1.7, you know, 2 maybe on a good day. A little farther to the west, you're getting up to be a 19, which is fine with them. The water temperature has finally gotten up. I saw you a while back out in the bay and around the sound. And I was looking at water temperature, you know, 72, 73 degrees in the canal. Get out in Mississippi Sound, it goes to 66 to 68. That's a dramatic, you know. Bill Fishman and you offshore guys like Mike look for 2-degree temperature breaks. 6 degrees, that's incredible.
That's a bunch, mad. Yeah. Well, you got all that cool water coming down the rivers is what
it
is.
Yeah. Yeah. That's I've also got Mike and I were talking to Sean a couple weeks ago. You know, they took a dam out up in Sumter County, and it's been there since the 60s, I think, and they just took this dam out, and I think that may have a reason to release, you know, releasing a lot more fresh water that's added to the Tom Bigby that's coming down. Reason for what happened in the Delta this winter.
Well, I would argue this, though. You look at the year we had upstate, and it was incredibly rainy, and I'll tell you this, too, that there are places that got more floods and higher floods along the river than in recent memory. I don't be one of these people that expects to know what happened hundreds of years ago, but in recent memory, this was an incredibly wet year up there. So the dam may be a contributor, but there's a lot of rain. Of course, I'm a guy that I want the 10-tom. The 10-tom still needs the dams and lock system because that's commerce. That's our business. I'm a guy that has been arguing for a while. There's not any appreciable commercial business that goes on the Alabama River. And I wish they'd leave those locks open full time, just let alone take out the dams. I'd love that. But if they could just leave the locks open, let the water flow through there, let the fish migrate like they want to.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the Alabama River. There's not a lot of business going on up and down the Alabama River.
I know
River.
They, like Miller's Ferry, they do that for electricity.
Miller's Ferry, yeah. One story, yeah. But the other lock systems, well, yeah. Just let them go.
Yeah. Well, one thing.
And with time, it would naturalize itself. It would go back to normal.
Yep.
It would take a little time, but eventually, now, like I was saying, too, with this open dam, let's say, any open dams, the saltwater intrusion will come back,
Yeah, we'll have one year.
That's the reason why we lost all our oysters, why we're losing a lot of stuff, because of changing the environment conditions with freshwater, saltwater, who knows? I don't know.
Yeah, and that's what I was kind of getting to in my initial question. I wonder, and I don't have an answer to this, but maybe I'll dig into this. Maybe you can help me. When you have a situation like this, so we had that last full moon, right? And you had a lot of spawning fish west where you had clean water. People talking about spawning fish, big girls out there. If trout have not moved out of south end of the bay, areas that are affected by this fresh water, I wonder if that just doesn't bode well for the next full moon and the spawn for May, when it'll be cleaned up, most likely. It looks like it's
getting down.
And that those fish did not spawn because of that fresher water, and they wait, and they'll spawn on this, this full moon. They're not going to spawn when the conditions aren't right, and conditions weren't right. They're still there. So maybe we get a really good week leading into the full moon in May.
Yeah, and right now we're into the new moon today.
Mm-hmm.
And that also is a good moon, too, for them. You get your good tides. And we're coming off a nip tide last week and got good tides coming in. So with the warm water out front, maybe, a little to the west where they got, sandy and good salinity and some warmer 76, 78-degree water, we should have a good spawn starting now. And, of course, once they start, every 10 days to 2 weeks, somewhere in that range, that is like 7 to 14 days, they'll continue to spawn until the salinity gets some more, or it gets cold, which will be October-ish, September-ish. So we should have a good spawn.
But also those, it seems to be, I don't know what science bears out, but it seems to be those first big spawns of spring and early summer are the, I know they're spawning throughout the year, but those are the big ones. And I don't know that they just pent up or whatever. And I just wonder if this situation with the fresh water, the silver lining to this is, while we had people took advantage of it last month where the water was cleaner and saltier, that we'll get to do that kind of again in May,
even more
than normal.
In the May. I think we're 2 weeks from it. I think it's the 18th, I think, somebody said.
All right. So let's talk about catching them. Now that we talked about the science of these trout, let's talk about catching some of them and what you're doing. I mean, are you looking shallow now? Are you looking? I mean, I guess it's dependent on where the salt water is. And then within that, what are you doing to target fish?
Yeah, I've been finding them both ways, up in the marshy areas, where the cleaner water is, find them, underneath popping corks. When you can't get live bait's been hard to come by. Of course, they just shut down shrimping except for the bait areas in the ship channel and the live bait areas until June 1st. So they've been getting shrimp out of Florida, and they've been keeping some, but they get to them pretty quickly, like Mike was saying, with the influx of so many people, with a lot more pressure. So if you want live bait, call ahead and make sure they have it. Don't depend on it. But your shrimp imitations, your voodoo types with, a little scent on them, and it's working pretty well. In the deeper water still around, the reefs to the west where I like to go.
Now
you catching a few fish in there too, and in the deeper water, 8 to 9 feet where the salinity's constant. Some white trout too, Sean, your favorite.
Yeah,
catching some of those too. So it's getting that way. It was getting real good till this last influx of water, but we're getting into a good, moving into a summer pattern pretty quickly.
All right, we come back from the break. There's a lot to talk about. Even talk about these live shrimp this time of year, how hard it is to get them, and you want to hold them all day. One of the best I know on keeping bait frisky and alive all day is Captain Charlie Gray. He'll talk to us how he does it before you go throw them in your live well and then open up the live well later in the day and say, what happened? Why are they all dead? He'll walk us through some of the techniques he uses. Plus, we'll talk about some of these proposed limits for speckled trout, flounder. We were talking about them in past shows. Get his take on it as well. Coming right back, more of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. And by the way, reminder, once again, this is going on today. Conservation Advisory Board meeting starts officially at 9. You sign up for the to speak starting at 8 this morning. Another reminder, too, taking the midday show on the road today. Negus Marine starting at 10 o'clock. We'll be there from 10 to noon today.
Awesome, yeah.
So come out and see us at Negus Marine starting at 10 this morning. And they're coming right back. This is FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you along. Good to talk to our buddy, Captain Charlie Gray of Gray Gulf Charters. By the way, if you want to get that trip booked going into great fishing ahead, how do they do it?
They can call me, 251-379-5067. Check out my website, www.greygolfcharters.com, or charlie@greygolfcharters.com. We'll get them worked up, get them in.
Good deal. You know, talking about the month of May, and there's a lot of other fish we can talk about. It's just, you know, May is so synonymous with speckled trout fishing. But yeah, it's been we've had high water. But although Mike and I have talked about on the freshwater side, Charlie, that you know, for up the river fishing, up the Tom Bigby and up the Alabama, in recent memory, you're not doing that till June.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, it's been that kind
typically
of
what it is. Yes.
So I mean, it's we've been in this pattern where, you know, the idea that you're going to be fishing up the rivers in April, May, just not a thing.
It hadn't been for many, many years. Now, it might come down for a week.
Yeah.
And then it goes right back up for a month or so.
Yeah, it comes up on a Tuesday when I'm at work.
Yes.
I mean, it comes down on a Tuesday when I'm at work.
That's exactly when it comes down.
But you're talking about the effect on the south end of the bay. But that's, I mean, it's getting better. It's going to clear up. And what about places like the shoals? I mean, those places have been muddy. But what about once they clear up? I mean, the fish got to come back there.
There have been some fish out there, as usual. Resident fish that are they don't go too far, but they've been short. A lot of action out there before it got so muddy again, so those fish are ready to stay there and spawn and do what they do. And of course, you know, come June, that's the big month. That's when everything really turns into what it's supposed to be, it seems like, you know. And so as we get through this next, with the river falling and everything getting back to normal, you know, the next 7 to 10 days will be get everything turned around, we'll be good, right in time for the next full moon in May.
That's right. That
Charlie,
is right.
What about out front in the Gulf, in front of the island? Is it doing anything right now? The water ought to be fairly clear.
I haven't trout fished out there yet. But the water's clean. Water's nice. You know, a lot of real clean water, especially around Dixie Bar in that area. The water's real pretty over there. A lot of big bull redfish over there still, you know, our breeder stock. So that's always something good to target if you get some live croakers, live pinfish, or just, you know, some dead bait just drift out there. But that's been a good target right now too.
Hey, while we're talking about live bait, and you talked about how tough shrimp are to get right now coming from Florida, a lot of people getting them, talk to folks what you do this time of year to make sure you got good live bait all day.
Well, first thing I'll do is I use the water that comes from the bait shop. Don't recycle the water. I had some shrimp the other day, had them in a bucket, water got dingy, got them overnight. Used a lot of them. I had a lot left over. Went out and swapped the water out. They were done in 15 minutes. So
really?
We call these Florida shrimp three cast shrimp because you've got to get them presented right. But after about three casts, they'll be limp because, especially in shallow water, even if it's not salty, they just can't handle this different salinity that we have here. So keep the water from the bait shop, and even if you need an extra 5 gallon bucket full, ask them for it.
Yeah.
And swap that
and you're not running, you're recirculating water. If you have them in a well, you're recirculating that water. You're not pumping new water into the well.
Don't pump any of this top new water in that well. You won't have any shrimp when you get to your first spot. They'll be gone.
Has Maurice opened down there yet?
Not yet. Any day now, he's going to be open. Deer River's been having bait.
What about Mark?
Mark's got bait. Mark's wide open with bait. And I think Maurice's going to be open any day now. Any day now.
So, and another thing I've seen you do, you know, if somebody doesn't have, like, you've got a 25 contender, you got bait wells you could swim in for sure. But if somebody's got I've gone with you in the past too. You use those was an angle box or something like that to insulate. It's like a cooler with latches on it.
Yeah, do that. Or
keeps the water cold.
The Yeti buckets are good and insulated, but not as insulated as good as that angle box is. And then get you some of these blue $1.50, whatever they cost, freezer packs. Mm-hmm. Freeze them. I put them in a Ziploc because I'm paranoid about everything anyway, about touching the bait and killing it. So you can put 2 in a gallon Ziploc bag and drop them in there, and that'll keep that water temperature real low. It'll get it where it's 10, 15 degrees. You felt it, Sean.
Mm-hmm.
Cooler than the air. And then that insulated box, they'll stay in there all day long. I mean, it's amazing. At noon, you put your hands in there to get a shrimp out, and the water is at least 10 degrees cooler than the air and the surrounding water. So,
of course, that's important because
shrimp happy.
Yeah, and because the oxygen, you can get more dissolved oxygen the colder the water is than the hotter the water is. So there's more oxygen in it for them. Yeah, you better get ready. Pack your strength. Eat your Wheaties before you go get a shrimp out of one of those boxes because they're fired up.
They are fired up. They hit that water and it freaks them out. Another thing you got to be careful too now. You buy these baits that come, these shrimp that come from an inside bait shop like Mark's, and there's nothing wrong with that, but that they're in the air conditioning all night. You throw them into a live well that's, if we get to the summer and you're 80 degree water, it shocks them.
Mm-hmm.
They're not used to that. So you kind of need to leave them in the 5 gallon bucket, acclimate them as the day goes on, and be careful.
Yeah, and it's tough for people to be patient doing that. They're like, there are probably people eye rolling at that. But you know what? When it's the second half of the trip during the day and they don't have any live bait and they're running back in because everything died, because they all turned orange in their live well, and people still have bait, it's because they took these steps like Captain Charlie does early on. And it just bears fruit. I don't want to come back in and get more bait. I want to fish. I don't want to come back in and make another bait run. I want to fish. I don't want to have to drag a net again. I want to fish.
These are great tips for people. A lot of people don't know that.
Be careful what you put in that bait well. Wash your hands.
Okay, people think that's silly.
The boat and I don't have any suntan lotion on or any whatever you call it, sunblock. You could have touched something with grease on it. You could have touched something on the center console that somebody else touched that had potato chips on it. You know, just. I religiously wash my hands overboard every time before I reach in that live well, and I asked that my customers that let me get the bait because I had an experience before with a little girl spraying suntan lotion, and it got into the bait well. The bait died about 8 o'clock in the morning, and Daddy got mad at me, wanted to know what killed all the bait, and I just had to hold my tongue, which is hard.
Yeah, it is.
And getting one of those, you know, I have those nets, the bait net in my boat that I use to fish it out there. You still got to watch how much of your hand would touch the net if you had sunscreen on or something like that, but that helps a little bit using that bait net to dip them out of there versus it also probably less
easier.
Stress yes, because as you get to the last few, when you have a gazillion shrimp in there, it's one thing, but when it gets later and you're having to chase one around the tank, that's just stressing them too. And I know this all sounds
stress
like
you too.
Yes, it does. I know this all sounds, people are like, oh gosh, why they make this so complicated, but this is, I mean, these seem like little, you know, pain in the tail things to do, but if you do these early in the day, I've watched it with you. You got bait all day.
There's one little thing, one mistake, and you can ruin the whole trip. You got to go back and get bait. I don't carry a bait net, you know, for a shrimp trawl, so you got to go back and get bait. And typically, I'm gonna be 10 or 15 miles from the bait shop, and you got to wait in line, and you're starting over. It's just not worth it.
Then you get back there, and they may not have bait.
Yep,
that's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Let's talk a bit about some of what's been the news and the chatter on the show too. About these proposed changes for flounder and speckled trout. And I will say that maybe we can breeze through flounder. I don't know a lot of people that are bothered by suggestions on flounder. I know there has been a lot of chat about speckled trout changes.
Yeah, the flounder obviously is going to get changed. I guess go up a couple of inches on the minimum and maybe down on the possession to 5 fish or whatever. For commercial and recreational, and they're going to have, I think, a 30-fish limit for the commercial guys, and that is going to be per boat, not per person, because there's been some chatter about them getting licenses for kids and this, that, the other, and keeping 120 fish for 4 people if they do.
What was the limit? What was the limit? Do you know?
For the commercial, unlimited, I think. I don't think there was one.
Okay. Well, I didn't know. I didn't know whether it was 100 or unlimited or... Okay,
that's an issue.
If it was unlimited and they cut them down to 30, that's going to be a big effect on them.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's finally, you know, even though Yeah, flounder's one of those weird species, both a game fish and a commercial fish. I'm going to speak as a recreational angler. I always feel like, you know, we get limits and restrictions, and I just want to help the flounder. And then you see that the commercial guys don't have to adhere to it. That I don't want to put them out of business, but it bothers me.
Yeah, and neither does the state. And I talked to the state about this those exact words. We don't want to put the commercial guys out of business. They don't want to. They're trying to help. But if there's no flounder in 2 years,
then they'll
look where we are now. Yeah. It's a tough species. Of course, we don't target them all the time. They're a bycatch when you're trout fishing or red fishing. But they're not as many. And everybody you talk to the giggers, and you talk to the netters, and you talk to the commercial guys, and they'll tell you we're not catching the numbers we used to catch. So something's got to be done, and they're going to close the season, you know, when they're heading offshore to spawn, I think from
September
1st or October 1st till the end of the month or whatever. So about 30 or 45 days only is what the proposal. And, of course, after CAB meets today, we'll know the answers because this is all going to be brought up today.
Yep.
So if you've got a dog in the hunt, you might want to – you're probably already there.
But yeah, or no, I don't know. You can sign up. They said I talked to the folks. They said sign up to speak at 8, and they'll start taking – comments at 9, and that's at Gulf State Park today. What about the other side of this coin? Flounders won. Let's talk about speckled trout.
Speckled trout, probably going to raise the limits to 15 inches.
Now, I'm hearing 16. So you're hearing back. See, this has moved around because I heard 16 the other day.
Yeah, I talked to the guys at the state, and they're saying 15.
15.
They're thinking right now.
Okay.
15 is what we'll find out today, but 15 and 5 fish, or maybe they'll keep it at 10 fish. There's going to be a lot of debate today. So everything that they're proposing is not necessarily going to be what's written in stone. So
yeah,
anyhow, we're going to have
a reduction in number one. What people need to understand is a pretty good shot that there's going to be a reduction in the 10 fish limit to 5 or 6. I heard six.
I heard six is what
we heard from Scott, but that may have changed. And then the other part is the slot element. No, you're right. It was 15 on the slot to what on the upper end?
22-ish.
Yeah,
22. I think
with one over.
Yeah, the trophy fish.
You know, when I met with Scott and them, which I did, that was I thought that we would never get a slot limit with one over, but that's just in case you catch a state record fish or a fish that somebody wants to mount. That's fine, but it's gonna help us greatly, I think.
Our tournaments.
Yeah, or in a tournament
fishing tournament.
But so this is something though. I think this bears some discussion as you know we try to be frank and honest about things. And Director Bannon was with us. In the past, and said I think there'll be some help from a slot. I'm not crazy about the. I'd rather have a slot though than a reduction limit. I think the people that only get to fish trout a few times a year should be able to keep 10 fish. But that's just me personally. But on the slot side, the number of people that consistently catch trout that would be above that 22 inches are probably high graded as people that turn them back anyway. So I don't, you'll make some impact, sure, in putting those back. But do you think that's a fair thought process that the people that already, that consistently catch fish above 22 inches are probably the people, with a few exceptions, are turning the majority of those big fish back?
Pretty much, yeah, pretty much. The recreational guys that catch those big fish are letting them go. You're right. You can have rogues and on both sides.
Sure.
You can have commercial rogues. You can have recreational rogues that are going to keep doing what they've been doing. But
they're not the majority, I don't think. I have
no scientific evidence, but
I just have anecdotal evidence that the people that – and anybody, listen, you could go down with a piece of hot dog on a treble hook and catch a 26-inch trout. There's stories like that.
Yeah.
But people that consistently catch big trout are people that are really interested in the resource and the people that we've long been turning big fish back.
And fish all
mostly,
the time.
Yeah, that are trying to catch that trophy fish. They're targeting those big fish. And you've heard others – talk about it. You may fish there all day and catch one fish, two fish, but that's what they tell people. These people that go after these trophy fish, they know up front that they're going to be it's going to be a long day. It's like any kind of species you're targeting the biggest one. That's the reason they're so big and they're not there all the time. So
and you're using big baits a lot of times too, which are going to make it where the smaller fish typically don't hit them.
It's a different technique for
those
bigger fish.
Yeah. That's right. Totally different.
So, I think the slot will, it'd be unfair and dishonest to say the slot wouldn't help some. Of course it is. There's going to be fish that they'll get turned back that wouldn't have been turned back before. But do I think it's going to make a huge change in the number of big fish that are turned back into the population? I don't think so. But we'll see what's proven on
time
that.
Time
will tell. A lot on the table today. We'll see what shakes out. The this afternoon or whenever word breaks here, I'm sure it'll be all over the social media as quickly as it comes out of what they new rules are adopted. But it won't take effect until either July or August, probably August 1st. So it'll be just after the summer's about done anyway.
Yeah, and after we're finished chasing those red snapper too. You ready?
Well, I'm ready, brother. I've been ready. I think I saw some in the light the other night.
I have not been able to fish, but I've been hearing stories, people just, you know, fishing close rigs and stuff, and said it's just, although it's the same story every year, it's just ridiculous. They're trying to catch sheephead down the rigs.
Sheephead. You can get through the snapper for the sheephead.
Isn't that crazy? That's crazy.
Good problem to have, I guess, but we got to do something. We got to go put a hurting on them, Sean, so we can make sure there's not as many next year.
That's right. I'll do my part.
We're going to have a conversation on where we're going to park when we go snapper fishing, though. That's our next conversation. They got to do something on parking down at Dolphin Island. It's ridiculous.
They're working some ideas. I don't know what those ideas are, but they're. And while we're talking about that stuff, let me say this. It got covered some of the news. We talked about it on the show, but when you talk about government, it's always, and usually it bears out true, that things are more expensive and take longer than they ever tell you in government. Well, let's talk about Scott Bannon and the crew with Alabama Marine Resources, the Boggy Point launch.
Yeah.
And the contractor they used, 2.5 weeks ahead of schedule and on budget?
Really good.
Let's compliment. When people do
right,
let's compliment. That was, you know, and people say, why did they do?
The Fort Morgan ramp, too, yep. They did last year. They got it done. And it's great now. It's like, huge, brand new, just state-of-the-art. Good job. Congratulations to Chris Blankenship,
yep.
Scott Bannon, and the whole crew.
No, that needs to be said, because all you ever hear from people in the hunting and fishing world is we complain about the stuff that's wrong, which is fine.
Yeah.
But when people do stuff right and people have said, why would they start that project, you know, so late to do the Boggy Point? Well, the funding didn't come. January 22nd, I think, is when they could possibly, the first day they could get the money. That's how they had to do it.
And we know from talking to them about reefs and whatnot that they have to bid this stuff out. It takes a while. They've got to get through all the hoops, because if they don't, somebody's going to be in there to get them for not doing the right thing. So
right.
They have to do it correctly. They have to do it by this government contract.
So when you see somebody with the state on the fish, say, hey, good work, by the way. I mean, if you're somebody who's going down this morning launching at Boggy Point or something like that, say, you know what, thanks, y'all. Y'all, that's good. So let's be positive when we can. And it definitely calls for it now. Okay, once again, before we wrap up here, they want to get a trip booked with Gray Gulf Charters. How do they do it?
I'm at 251-379-5067. Charlie at GrayGulfCharters.com, www.GrayGulfCharters.com. Instagram, Captain Charlie Gray Fishing. Google me. You'll find me. Let's go.
All right. Good stuff. Coming right back, more of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. And, Conservation Advisory Board meeting going on today down here in our neck of the woods, Gulf State Park at the main building there. So, all right, coming right back, we'll shift gears. Post-mortem on turkey season, we'll do that. Plus, speaking of the Conservation Advisory Board, what about baiting? We'll talk about those rules when we get back. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Big thank you to Captain Charlie Gray, checking in from Dolphin Island. It's post-mortem on turkey season now. It's in the rear view. It's in the rear view.
Yep.
But I tell you, it's for being a weird turkey season and bad for a lot of people, it's pretty good for me. I've killed more turkeys. I guess I've killed more turkeys, but it was just, I hunted several different places. I had that fantastic hunt. It's funny. One of the hunts I didn't kill anything.
Yeah.
Was my best hunt of the year, probably.
Yeah.
And that was up at Cedar Creek, at the SOA at Cedar Creek. I got drawn for that hunt. I hate to announce this publicly, but to be fair, I'll be looking at those SOA turkey hunts. They are fantastic. The ground is fantastic. I was in turkeys for days up there.
Yeah.
I mean, just getting to really chase turkeys and strike a turkey later in the morning, go to turkeys instead of kind of just having to, like at the farm, we've always been, it's like, he's going to be roosted one of a couple places, and if he gobbles, then you're going to make this chest move.
Yeah.
There's really not a third move. There's like two moves, and then you're out. To be able to go that just woods that were just infested with turkeys up there, just you can leave a bird and move.
Go to another one.
It was neat. You and I got to hunt, which was good. We hadn't been able to do that in a while. Got to hunt this year. A couple times. I started the beginning of the season missing one, which I hadn't done in a while, but brought me back to humility. And then ended up killing a couple there towards the middle of the season. I'd say about the middle of the season. I killed two. One in Washington County, one down in Mobile County. And then this last weekend, one of my best friends got to kill one with me. And, man, I'm on cloud nine. And I just showed you on my phone the pictures of the Jakes. Got five Jakes in one group on a camera.
You got them coming.
I'm happy. That's happy. How about you?
Well, I hunted hard last week.
You always hunt hard.
Well, my grandson was out of school for spring break all week, so we hunted, a lot. And just like you were up at Cedar Creek, I mean, I was on turkeys the whole time and getting them where I could hear them. And you're pretty close when you do that.
Yep.
And I just could not get them to come in. I did not kill a turkey, and I hunted six days total last week.
And I tell you right now, I'd have lost that bet. If you tell me Mike Ward's going to lay with them, I think you'd. Would have whacked one in day two.
And we laid with them, and we hunted all day. I'm telling you, we were on turkeys. Well, I just couldn't get one to come to them. I had them doing things I'd never heard them do before. I mean, just steady gobbling, going away from me. And I'd get on another turkey gobbling, and he'd steady go away from me. Get on another turkey gobbling, and he'd steady go away from me. And I had two one morning that they acted like they were running through the woods gobbling.
And what happened?
I mean, just go. And then I tried to get around on them, and they were just steady. I don't know where they were going. It's like all the turkeys were on a mission to go somewhere, and I don't know where that was. But it wasn't towards me, I can tell you that. So anyway, had some great hunts, a lot of gobbling.
Y'all killed birds.
Yeah. I had a good season. I mean, I killed three. My grandson killed one. I mean, for most people, that's a good
most
year.
Most people, you know what they call that? 2 years.
Yeah. So, I have no complaints and had some great hunts. So I had a good year.
And, this is going to be part of what's that we were mentioning earlier, Conservation Advisory Board meeting going on today.
Yeah.
And, one of the discussions going forward, get ready, is going to be a discussion of what to do about turkey populations. Now, it's an interesting subject. And, if you listen back, and it's probably up, it's still up on the podcast page, interview I did with Dave Owens from the Pinhoti Project 3-4 weeks ago. And I got into, we talked all about turkey hunting at the end of it because Dave hunts a lot here. He hunts everywhere. I mean, the guy has a U.S. Super Slam. He's killed a turkey in every state you can kill a turkey in. But he says, I said, what about the decline in population of turkeys in Alabama? And he really got fired up and said, I don't agree with that. Okay. Now, he has great anecdotal knowledge because he hunts so much. Dude hunts like every. He starts off
just about every day of the season.
He starts off hunting Osceolas in South Florida and works his way. I mean, he hunts for like 3 months straight and hunts a bunch of it while Alabama season's open here and hunts public land. Okay. I respect Dave Owen and respect his opinion, but he doesn't see a big problem. I talked to scientists out there, people who are biologists that say we got an issue at poult recruitment. In other words, how many new turkeys are created for every hen on the landscape? And in their surveys, that's gone down and down. I think you have to have, average of two to be able to grow. Two poults per hen grows the population. 2.1 poults per hen grows the population. Anything below that, you're losing.
Yeah.
And I think we're at 1.7 in a lot of these studies. So, I mean, there's, I don't want to disagree. I mean, and what I want to go back to on that, though, is I think it's site specific. So you could be on one piece of property and have an increasing turkey population and another decreasing.
That's
and
a fact.
For multiple reasons. Problem is, if you're running it for the state, you got people in your ear saying what's happening with it, and you may have to put in a management practice or rules for the state that seem unfair to the person who has
plenty
and a building population and seems perfect to the person who's trying to figure out what to And I'm lucky enough right now to hunt two different properties. One, I can definitely tell you, place in Washington County. We got a real problem. I've watched it. I've watched and watched and watched. And then another place that I don't have a full sense of yet, but looks like it's doing pretty good. So, and it's tough. Now, the tough thing, too, and I've talked about this up in Washington County, is I think I do things right with my burning regimen.
You do.
Chufas, food plots, brooding areas, strip disking, all the things I'm trying to do to improve. But I'm surrounded by people who don't do anything.
Yeah.
And so I can only affect, and we're 600-something acres, I can only affect what I can on my place.
And a lot of it is pasture.
Yes. 200-something acres of it is pasture. But now I took took 40 acres in
which
that
is
pasture.
Good. You already think you would think turkeys be out there in the springtime strutting everywhere,
and they used to be. And listen, a pasture, and if you know how to hunt pasture birds, it can be very frustrating, but pasture is good for killing turkeys. But I'm talking about raising turkeys.
Yeah.
And that pasture is no good for raising turkeys.
Yeah.
It's good for seeing them. It's good for, you know, if you know how to work them, you know, you can get around it and kill them. But I'm talking about raising turkeys.
Right.
And they need certain things. They need ground those little poults can walk around in and bug but not be seen from above. You have to have good nesting area. You have predator management issues. That's part of it. You know, like, I'm into predator management, but that is a piece of it. You can't just say, well, you know, I've got nothing but you know, closed canopy pines with nothing but pine straw on the ground, but I'm predator trapping. Yeah. I should have fixed it.
Yeah.
It's not that simple. So the state's going to look at this, and how they're going to address it, I'm sure, is with take and limit. We're going to see that. And there's a whole other part of the discussion, okay? Do you have less turkeys or you have less goblin turkeys? You know, I mean, people say, yeah, I don't have the turkeys I used to. Do you not, or do you have – you just don't hear the goblin? One thing is – that I think there's a lot of turkeys that used to make it to the next year and used to make it into being an old turkey that don't on some properties. And I'm going to say this is going to be blasphemous. And I'm not saying that I don't do this. I'm not saying that I won't do this with routine with my children hunting with me now. But the idea is, used to be before, and I was a proponent of decoys, and I still am, because I like decoys because it lets people move on a turkey to make a better shot when the turkey's not paying attention to him. Yeah. You got kids with you. I mean, it's the best thing ever to get the turkey's eyes off you while you move a gun barrel. There's turkeys over the years that decoys have become legal and popular in the state that have died, gobblers that would not have died without them. Agreed?
I believe that, yeah.
They would have gotten so old they'd been dang near unkillable,
yeah,
but they'd have built that population of goblin birds. Just because he gobbles doesn't mean he's going to come to you.
That's right.
There's birds like that. And listen, I can do the overly simplified. Those birds get bushwhacked in green fields with people sitting in a tent blind with a decoy in front of them. I'm not one to tell people how to hunt, as long as you stay within legal lines. But I'm just saying that may be I got friends of mine that would like to stop everybody from doing it. I don't want to stop anybody from hunting how they want to hunt, as long as it's legal and ethical. That's fine. If you want to hunt, that's cool. But at the same time, that may be part of people saying, I don't have the goblin birds I used to. What used to be, you didn't kill. There are some of those birds that were, if you're just chasing them in the woods, you know, birds, you're like, I tried to kill them all season. Right?
Yeah,
and I was here, I know, and he went over there. And then, yeah, I went over there where he was, and he was over there.
Yeah, that's right.
And he'd gobble at me and courtesy gobble all day, but he'd never come to
me.
Yeah,
that's right.
There's those birds. Some of
but
those
listen,
birds
I've used decoys.
Yeah,
and
I've got
mixed emotions about them. I've killed a few turkeys with decoys, but I've got to where I don't hardly put decoys out anymore. I just don't have the luck with them. And maybe it's because I'm hunting basically in the woods.
Yes.
You know, if you're hunting in big fields or something, mm-hmm, where they can see them at long distance, that might make
back
a difference.
Back to that pasture conversation.
You know, just like out west.
Pasture,
you know,
poison is what I call
well,
them.
Well, you go to Missouri and yeah, you go to Kansas and you go to these big open fields and stuff, and you see people. They're sitting in tents or they,
yep,
you know, or they're sitting next to a field and they got the decoy out in the field and they kill the fire out of turkeys.
And you can
know?
Kill that 4.5-year-old bird that would make a fool of you trying to hunt them without a decoy. Once again, I'm not anti. I want people to hunt, and I want people to hunt legally and ethically, but I'm not here to judge. But the 4.5-year-old bird that would make a fool of you with mouth yelper in the woods, you can put a decoy out and kill him. I mean, just straight kill him.
Sometimes.
I've done it before. I mean,
yeah,
I've done it.
I've
felt guilty.
I
felt guilty in the pasture killing birds that I probably shouldn't have killed.
Yeah. But I've had them run from the decoys,
I've
too.
I've had one run from a decoy.
So it gives me mixed emotions on it. Yeah.
But I tell you, 95% of the time that I've had gobblers come in when I've used a decoy, it's poison.
Yeah.
It's poison.
Yeah.
You know, and my, you know, to me, the real benefit has been being able to move or have a kid move a gun.
Well, that's
that gobbler,
you can do that.
And gobbler's not
paying no attention to you.
Looking at
you
the
shoot
decoy.
Him with a bow or whatever, yeah, you need to do. Yeah.
So that may come out as part of the conversation. Listen, we'll wrap this up when we get back. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, about to wrap it up for this week. But remember, CAB, Conservation Advisory Board meeting in our neighborhood. They get cranked up. At 9 o'clock officially, 8 o'clock sign up to speak. Also, 10 o'clock this morning, y'all come see me. I'm going to be out at Negus Marine starting at 10, going till noon, and I'll be there with the midday replay, but I'll be doing it live, be introducing the segments and hanging out with Ed and Dom. The whole gang's there, and they are
great folks, man.
Liquidating. I mean, they are getting out of the business. They've been doing it 40 years. The amount of boat items is just, it's, you know, often people say, it's like nothing you've ever seen. Y'all, it's like nothing I've ever seen walking around there. I mean, you're looking for little engines, little kicker engines. You're looking for a cowling for a 300 Yamaha.
Yeah.
You're looking for rod holders. You're looking for pumps. You're looking for that thing that fits your boat that you can't find anywhere. They got it. They got it. And this is a chance to come out today and just strike a deal. Get a good deal on this stuff.
And go help them get rid of it.
That's right.
You know, they want to get rid of it as quick as possible. I know. I've been in that situation.
Yep. Yeah. You know a little about that. Yep.
Yep. So they want to get rid of it. They appreciate everybody coming out and buying something from them. And every little bit helps get rid of it.
Yep. So that's going to be starting at 10 o'clock this morning. So come on out. Be part of that. That goes 10 till noon. I'll see you out there. All right. A couple other things. We're talking turkeys, talking the possibility that might be looking at some changes to turkey limits coming up. One thing we do know that looks like it's going to be a given is whatever it is, Senate Bill 61. I forget. The Baiton Bill.
Right, the Baiton Bill. The Corn Bill.
The Corn Bill. That's right. The Corn Bill. It's corny. That's going to happen. So, yeah, that's the thing. So
it's passed the House. Mm-hmm. It's passed the Senate. The governor's got to sign it.
She's going to sign it. So everything I hear. So that's that's the thing. So
this year, like Chuck Sykes says, if you want to, you can stand in the pile of corn
right,
and watch them coming to the corn and kill them before they ever get to the corn.
That's right. There's no more 100 yards. There's no more this and that. If you want to hunt over bait, you could have it, like you said, stand in it, sit in it, put it in your pockets.
Yeah.
Let the feeder rain the corn down on you like a shower, whatever you want to do.
But it's going to cost you $16 or $15 for
a $1 issuance
for a permit, I guess, to hunt over corn. And it doesn't matter whether you're 10 years old, you got to have it. If you're going to hunt over it, if you're 10 years old, you don't even have a hunting license, you got to have this permit. And if you're 65 or older and you don't have to have a hunting license anymore, it doesn't make any difference. You have to have that $15 permit.
All right. So, I mean, I know there's a lot of us that are paying attention to this. But a lot of your kinfolk and friends haven't, so you're going to be in the know. You're going to be telling them as it goes through the summer. They'll come up to you. Did you hear we can bait? You said, yeah. In fact, we can. I said, you could stand in the pile of corn if you want to.
But believe me, did it's you know you got to have a permit? They'll what? Say, you got to have a permit?
Right. You know, that whole conversation is going to happen. am I already going to try to put some dollars down, buy some stock in some companies that make feeders?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
of course. And you think there was a lot of corn for sale up and down Highway 45 and 43 before?
Yep. Everywhere you go. Well, that'll help because maybe competition make the price come down a little bit, I hope.
Yep, that's for sure. Of course, my worry, this is why I can't have fun. I'm looking at the stories right now, the flooding in the upper Midwest, right? Mississippi River flooding going on. And I'm not even thinking about how that affects Venice and fishing down through the summer down there. I'm thinking about, okay, they can't get corn in those places, and there's going to be an increased, demand for corn here, and we have a shorter supply. What are they going to be getting for corn? I may have to start stocking up. I don't want panic buying going on until I get done with my panic buying, trying to buy everything.
I want to put some stock in corn.
I know. I wish I knew what direct company, you got to – it's not even the overall, but the people that take it and put it in bags – although there's going to be a lot of people move to a system now, I'm telling you right now with this, where they're going to have drums and silos and not be going and buying it bag by bag. They're going to be buying it by bulk. Truck delivery bulk.
Yeah, bulk.
Mm-hmm. We'll have more conversation about that coming up. We're out of here. Prep Sports Report on the way next. Y'all have a great one.